Welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm Laura Zaro-Kopinski.
Today on A Bookish Home, I'm talking to Thomas Taylor, author of Malamander, the first book in the new middle grade series, Legends of Irion Sea. School Library Journal calls Malamander a crowd-pleasing fantasy and notes colorful characters, palpable atmosphere, close calls, and some deliberately unanswered questions will hook readers on this new British series and leave them eager for more. Thomas Taylor is an award-winning author-illustrator for children. He illustrated the cover for the original British edition of the first Harry Potter book and has since gone on to write and illustrate several picture books and graphic novels. He lives on the south coast of England. Thomas Taylor, welcome to A Bookish Home and congratulations on this new series. I'm really enjoying it so far.
Hello, Laura. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. It's been great fun to write and it's good to be invited. Thank you.
Yes. So tell us a bit about the world of Irion Sea and the characters we meet in this first book, Malamander.
Well, Irion Sea is very much based on seaside towns that I've known, and including the seaside town I live in now. And so it's strange. It's a bit mysterious. It's full of quirky little streets and funny little shops. But I've deliberately chosen to set my stories out of season. So it's not the tourist season. The tourists have gone. Nights have drawn in, all the ice cream kiosks are closed, and mist creeps up the beach. And so that the kinds of legends you might laugh about in the summer suddenly seem less laughable and altogether more real in the winter. And on the seafront in the Irion Sea is the Grand Nautilus Hotel. And in the basement of the Grand Nautilus Hotel is the Lost and Foundry. And in the Lost and Foundry lives a 12-year-old boy called Herbert Lemon, or Herbie to his friends. And he's the hero of the book, along with his friend Violet, who hands herself into the Lost and Foundry, because it's Herbert's job to find the owner of lost things and get the lost things back again. And Violet's been lost and she wants to be found again.
I love Herbie so much, the main character. And he reminds me, I was thinking as I was reading, he's got a bit of that Bilbo Baggins getting drawn into an adventure that he's not quite
he's a reluctant hero. He really is.
Yes, yeah. He's definitely a reluctant hero. And I was curious if he came to you as a character first, or obviously the setting is so rich as well. I guess I was just curious sort of what the spark of inspiration was.
I think, in a way, his name has certainly been with me for a long time because he's named after a British candy called Sherbet Lemons, which I've called for some reason Herbert Lemons for years. And it suddenly occurred to me that was a great name for a character. But the story itself was inspired more deeply by moving to a seaside town and just being there out of season and seeing who on earth comes to visit this place out of season. Who's staying in the hotel? Why are they there? And only somebody with a very good reason or a very bad reason would come at that time of year. And so I was inspired just by being there and thinking about these things and about walking on the beach. And so once I knew I had a hotel setting, I needed somebody in the hotel who would be the reader's hero. I'm not quite sure why I chose a bellhop type figure, but he came quite quickly. So I think it grew quite organically simply by walking on the beach in the dark of winter, wondering about where I am.
Yeah, I love the combination, and I think kids must be too, of, it's creepy and you have that mystery and adventure, but also it's very warm-hearted at the same time with the characters and lots of humor as well. I feel like you don't always see all of that together. I just love all the characters in the town. I feel like it's a lot of fun to read. I'm sure it must have been lots of fun to write. And the idea, too, of the legends, I'm curious about sort of how you came up with the Malamander legend and also if you had read a lot of legends as a kid or sort of where that interest came in.
Yes, I'm not really sure where the Malamander came from. All I knew was that I wanted to write about a sea monster. But initially, I didn't know whether I wanted to actually have the monster. I thought maybe it could just be a legend. But somehow I couldn't resist adding him in as I wrote the story. He seemed to demand to be in it. So he doesn't himself have a kind of genesis other than Well, he does a little bit. Actually, that's not true, because where I live on the south coast of England, you can find dinosaur footprints on the beach. They're being exposed by the tide. And when you see them, they're in rock. The rock is wet and it looks like mud. And so it looks like, even though this footprint is 135 million years old, it looks like it could have just been made. And so you look over your shoulder and wonder if it's still there, this creature that made that footprint. And so there is a bit of that in the Malamander. But I wanted him to be more legendary than just a dinosaur. He's described often as a fish man. He's scaly, he's strange, covered in spines, with large lamp-like eyes. I wanted him to be a little bit nightmarish, but I also wanted the reader to eventually sympathise a little with him. So he's quite a complex character, really. But and his name was derived because I just wanted a word that sounded familiar. I wanted a monster name that sounded like you'd heard it before, and I just hit upon the idea that if I took the word salamander and changed one letter, that was enough, because of course mal in Spanish and in French means bad and evil. So suddenly Malamander sounds like a monster.
That's perfect. Well, I love too, there's sort of a book within the book about the Malamander, and the way Violet and Herbie get the book, I think, is so wonderful. Can you tell us about the book dispensary? And I so wish that this was a real thing, because it's so fun.
Yes, well, the book dispensary, this is actually an idea that I've had for a long time that I couldn't find a use for elsewhere. So the idea initially was that there would be a bookshop, a bookstore that was different, because you didn't go there to choose the book you wanted. You went there and had a book chosen for you by this mechanical automaton, which is a monkey sitting at a typewriter. And it types out a code. You put a coin in its hat, it types out a code, and the code leads you to a specific book on a shelf somewhere in the shop. And I had that idea a long time ago, and I couldn't quite work out what to do with it. And it was only when I was creating Erion C finally and deciding what would be in the town that I realized that's where the shop should be. And I changed it to be more nautical, and I turned the monkey into a mer monkey, so he has a fish's tail, but he still sits at a typewriter and he still dispenses a book. And the idea is that you don't get the book you want or the book you were expecting, but you get the book that just possibly you need. And I think real life can be a bit like that, because you sometimes read a book and suddenly realize it's just the right thing at that moment. You just needed it. And you didn't know in advance that this was the book you needed, and you read it and it tells you something. And of course it's subjective and interpretive, but I just love that idea. So I wanted to put that into the story as well, that the stories are almost dispensed like medicine would be in a pharmacy.
Yeah, I loved that. And I think that's so true. I can think of so many times where I do feel like a book found me that I needed. And it was reminding me, I feel like kids would just get such a kick out of this. It reminds me a little of the sorting hat in Harry Potter. And I feel like for school librarians and teachers listening, I feel like it would be such a fun activity to sort of do a little game or a pretend thing with doing your own book dispensary and trying to, you know, have kids take turns and sort of, I'm sure there's a way you could pretend to have do a little typing and come up with a book that they need and hand it to them. I feel like that would be so fun.
Well, that code that I use in the book, that code, you could use that in a reality. If you could find a way to generate the code, you could.
Well,
code
it
the
could
books.
Be. I was thinking as I was reading, I'm like, oh, that could be the call number in the library. It could be. Could come up with that. So I thought that was fun. But that was making me think too. I was looking at your Instagram page a little bit before we started, and it seems like you're doing a lot of school visits. And I love when we sort of try to bring a book to life. And it seems like you have lots of different like props and things. Can you talk about what your school visits have been like? And it just, and your feed in general is so fun too. I was seeing you had like an ornament that was from one of the little shops in the book, and that you've made up a Malamander stone game. I just thought that was also cute, sort of just bringing the world of the book to life.
Yes, when I go into a school, I don't really want to just stand there with a PowerPoint presentation. I want it to be a bit more interactive. So I bring beachcombing finds in little glass jars. What I do in the UK, I haven't been able to do that in the US where I am now, because I couldn't bring it here. But I have a pirate's chest, quite a large wooden chest, And I've wired it up for sound and light. So when I open it, it makes a sound of the sea and you can hear seagulls. There's a flickering blue light inside. And from inside there, I take out these things that I found on the beach. And I show them to the children and I explain what they are. For example, sea glass. But then after I've explained what sea glass is, I then explain that there's also a legend about sea glass that says that in reality, what sea glass is not broken lemonade bottles at all. It's frozen tears of mermaids. And usually when I say that, I then offer the children a chance to hold the frozen tear of a mermaid. And you can see their faces light up. And suddenly they all want to have an experience touching this sea glass that before maybe they thought was interesting. And now suddenly it's taken on a different dimension. And so I have several things like that. I have shells, nice pearlescent saddle oyster shells, which I then explain are, I think, the scales of the malamander and various things like that. And also some dinosaur bones and a coprolite, which always goes down very well. Of course, that's dinosaur poop.
I saw you have Herbie's lost and found cap too, which I thought was really cute.
Yes, I have them made, and I bring it along, and I always find a volunteer to wear it, and then I try and involve them in what's going on. So I think it's quite interactive and quite there's a bit of to and fro, and it's good fun. It's good fun going into the schools, and I've enjoyed doing that in my visit to the US, and I've got a lot of school visits booked up in the UK for this year.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's so fun to build excitement for the book and for reading in general, just by sort of bringing all that to life. And I know we mentioned the Sorting Hat connection. I'm sure you get asked about this all the time, but I would love to hear your very cool connection to Harry Potter, especially since I feel like kids, even now, so many years later, kids are always falling in love with Harry Potter again. And I think it's very cool that, I mean, I would definitely hand one of those kids Malamander. So that's just such a fun, I'm sure that must be a fun full circle moment for you.
Yes, it is. I mean, it was my first illustration job outside out of art school. So, and of course I had no idea it was going to go on to be so famous. I was just excited to be given a professional commission to do. And I deliberately targeted the publisher with samples of fantasy work because I could see they were taking on a lot of new texts, but I had no idea that it would actually pay off. But of course, then what happened is it became super famous. And as the book became more and more famous, my involvement with it, the cover, kind of overshadowed everything else I was doing. And I think most creative people, especially if they work professionally, will probably agree that when they start out, they probably hope their first efforts are quietly forgotten. And so to have mine keep coming back all the time and be seen as the most important thing I'd done almost was a bit frustrating for a long time. But I think now with time and also with the fact that Malamander has met with some success and it's now a great anecdote. It's a great line in my resume. Like it's a great thing to have been involved with, and I feel much more positive about it now. But it's for a while it was a little bit kind of in my way a little bit, my association with it. But I'm very proud of it now. And I always tell the school children when I go and see them, and they're always amazed.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, that's what I was just thinking. I mean, because I feel like so many kids would love Malamander and Harry Potter, it's so fun that you can share that little tidbit with them. Did you get to read the early manuscript, or did they sort of... Because I've looked at obviously the original cover and everything. Did they just sort of describe him to you and you came up with that, or?
Well, I had a meeting. I actually went into Bloomsbury's offices in London and had a meeting about it. And they gave me a manuscript printed out, a paper manuscript. This was back in 1996. And I still remember reading it on the train on the way home. And I would have read it a year before it was even published. So I would have probably been one of the first people in the world to read it.
So cool.
I remember it had chapter 11 was missing because the author was still working on it. So I was a bit frustrated when I got there because I didn't know what happened in that chapter. But the publisher had a very clear idea about what they wanted on the cover. So even though they'd given it to me to read, they just wanted to have a train and they wanted Harry. And so it was quite prescriptive. I was told what to do, really. But I did get to read it, yes.
Yeah, that's so cool. I was thinking, I worked at Scholastic for a little while, like right after the last book came out, but people would still talk about how manuscripts were had to be like locked up, and it was so hush hush. But I'm sure with the first, like, you were just right at the start where nobody knew it was going to be such a big deal. So I'm sure they were just handing the manuscript around like you would, because you know, you didn't know that yet.
And the frustrating thing is, I haven't kept that manuscript because it was a big chunk of paper, and about 4 months after I finished the job, I just threw it away. Because
I know, because why would you? Why would you?
Why would you keep it? But it, of course, it would have had, the author was still working on it, so there would have been small differences, and it would have been quite a collectible item now.
That would have been cool. Well, you obviously now have such strong ties to, like, middle grade fantasy books. Is that something you read a lot of as a kid, or were you a big reader as a kid?
I was, yes. And I don't think, I mean, back then, this would have been the 80s. I don't think we thought in such clear terms about middle grade and YA. I think there was children's writing, and then there was writing for everybody else. But there wasn't, I mean, I wasn't really very aware. Well, I read quite widely, but I was slow to come to read. But I never really stopped to wonder if I could read something. I just picked it up and tried reading it. And then if it was a bit beyond me, I put it down. But once I did take to writing, to reading, sorry, I really did take to it, and I read quite voraciously.
Are there any that really stand out to you as particular favorites when you were a kid?
Well, I do remember very clearly reading The Hobbit for the first time. Probably I would have been about 10 or 11. And it was the first time I'd read quite a substantial novel, as I saw it at the time. And I just remember being delighted to get lost in the text and lost in this bigger, longer form.
I feel like that's a book that a lot of people. Yep, I feel like that's a book that a lot of people remember really clearly from childhood. I know.
Yes, I think so. It's probably a boring answer. Really, so,
no, but I just think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that certain ones stick with us so well. Like I can definitely remember like where I was reading The Hobbit for the first time and just being really drawn into that.
Yes, I remember Alan Garner was another author I liked. Alan Garner and Weird Stone of Brisingamen, and Sherlock Holmes stories, and The Three Investigators. I love The Three Investigators series.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start thinking, you know, I don't want to just be reading the books anymore, I want to be illustrating as well?
Well, I was always told I was good at drawing. So right from an early age, I was encouraged to draw. So it felt like it was almost a foregone conclusion that I would go to art school in the end. But I also had this desire to write and to create stories of my own. But I was a little bit nervous about trying. I suppose in the same way that I was slow to come to read, I was quite slow to take up writing. And I kept having this sort of fear that I would try and then it wouldn't be very good, and then it would be something quite hard to deal with, that I didn't have what it took to be a writer. But I found that with drawing, I was just constantly creating my own world, my own characters. And eventually, when I did work as an illustrator, it was a bit frustrating to sit at home waiting for someone to write something for me to illustrate. So I just couldn't stop myself. In the end, I just started trying to write, and it kind of grew from there.
Well, I'm curious. I know. So you have this series out now. Do you think you will keep going with middle grade writing, or are you going to go back to picture books, or do you?
Yeah.
What's on the horizon?
Well, I was talking to someone the other day who said, "Would you fancy doing another picture book?" And I can honestly say I have no picture book ideas at all left. I have no ideas that shape, if you like. I've got nothing at all. I did try writing one a few years ago. I just, even that, I just couldn't. But I have found with the middle grade mode, I just really like it. I just feel at home in that age range. So I think I found my home when it comes to writing now, and I have no plans to deviate and go anywhere else.
Well, that's great, because I definitely loved Malamander, and I'm excited to read more. Well, I also love hearing from writers, too. I'm always curious about writers' sort of routines and writing habits. Are you someone who, you know, writes every day for like a set number of hours or words, or what's your like writing routine like?
It's quite choppy and messy, to be honest. I get up, and once I've got the school run and dog walks and all the rest of it, all the boring things out of the way, I do try to work morning through to early afternoon if I can, because that's my quiet time. But it doesn't always come easy. Sometimes if I'm very excited about what I'm doing, I can't wait to get to it, and I write a lot. But some days the engine is very cold and it takes a long time to get going. But I certainly don't write every day. I haven't got time. I mean, I find it very difficult to... I think some writers can just sit in a corner and take a pen and a piece of paper and start writing, whereas I feel I need to have very controlled surroundings and complete silence and know the phone won't ring and all that sort of thing, which is probably a bad mm-hmm. habit I should try and break out of, but that's, I do like to have some
well, it's working
conditions.
For you, so...
Well, it is, yeah, but it means I'm probably slightly slower than I could be. But I see people in cafes writing, I think, how on earth can you do that? And some people play music, don't they? And I think, well, how can you do that? But we all have our own way, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the second book, because I know that's coming out. Is it? Well, I'm sure it's different in the UK, but I think it's coming out here this summer, I want to say.
It's coming out at the beginning of May, and it's going to be coming out at the same time in the US and the UK. The two publication dates have been merged, so that's good. And it's we're going to find ourselves back in Erion-C with Herbie and Violet again, this time on a different adventure with a different legend. There's a legendary storm has returned to Erion-C and threatens to destroy the town. A stranger has turned up in the hotel who won't show his face. He wears a hood all the time, and there's something slightly monstrous about him. Somehow these things
I will definitely look forward to that. That's going to be perfect for kicking off summer reading, too. I'm sure that's going to make lots and lots of summer reading lists. And I also had seen that there might be a movie in the works. Is that maybe happening?
Yes, I've signed a contract with Columbia Pictures, Sony. And so, yeah, and that's very exciting. I'm going to wait and see what happens. They have the option, and they've... they've acquired the rights, so we'll see. And that's quite
that's
exciting
wonderful.
Because
this...
I can't help thinking that they're going to have to make a mermonkey, for example. I'm going to be able to see the real thing, and that's quite an exciting thought.
Yeah, this would be such a fun book to see come to life on screen. There's so many things I feel like would be just the whole setting of the town and the Malamander, and I'd love to see who they picked to play Herbie and Violet. I will be crossing my fingers that comes to life soon. I think that would be a lot of fun. Well, I always love to find out what authors are reading themselves. Are there any books you've read lately that you'd want to recommend to listeners?
I'm trying to think what children's book I've read recently. I am reading a Dan Simmons novel at the moment because I do like to read adult fiction as much as I can. So I'm reading The Terror by Dan Simmons at the moment. But and I've just got halfway through Philip Pullman's latest book, The Secret Commonwealth, his Book of Dust trilogy. So, and that's very good. So I would certainly recommend that.
Great.
But in middle grade, I read a book by Jenny McLachlan called The Land of Roar recently, which I think is great fun. You can look out for the Land of Roar.
Land of Roar.
Your listeners will enjoy that.
Oh, great. I'll link to all of those in the show notes. Well, I think readers would definitely love to follow you online. Do you know offhand what your Instagram handle is for them to follow you?
Yes, my Instagram is slightly strange, but it's at Tomskagram, and that's TomskAgram. But I'm quite searchable. You can find me if you search under Thomas Taylor. And then on Twitter, I'm at Thomas H. Taylor.
Oh, great. Okay. I didn't find you on Twitter. I'll look at that as well. Yeah. Your feed was so much fun. I'll definitely take a look at that. And your website too?
ThomasTaylor-author.com. So
great. I'll link to those.
There is also an Erion-C website. Trying to remember what it's called.
Okay.
It's quite a bit fun. It's worth seeing. Erion-C.com, I think it is.
Oh, great. I'll link to that as well. Yeah, I definitely recommend people pick up Valamander. I feel like there are so many kids that are looking for great fantasy reads, and this is definitely now at the top of my list, so it'll be perfect one to hand to the kids in your life. And just thank you for making the time to talk to us. I hope the rest of your US school visits go great. I'm sure the kids are going to
Thank
love
you.
hearing from you. And we'll be looking out for book two. What's book two called again?
It's called Gargantis.
Gargantus, wonderful.
It's another legend with a monstrous theme.
Well, yeah, thank you for coming on, and I will look forward to all those books.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for inviting me.
To find a link to Malander and all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, head over to the show notes at abookishhome.com. There you'll also find tips and ideas for building a culture of reading in your home, as well as plenty of reading recommendations for kids and grown-ups alike. If you're enjoying the podcast, it would be so helpful if you could rate and review in iTunes and subscribe. It really helps people find the show. If you're reading one of the books recommended on the blog or podcast, I'd love to hear about it. You can find me at A Bookish Home on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks for listening, and happy reading.